Copy exegesis. This is grammar, right? John 14. Never. Always precise. That's right. You make up a new category, right? John 14, 20. Excuse me. For some reason, the reading begins at verse 23, probably to avoid having to answer the question of why or how does verse 23 relate to verse 22. And the answer is, I'm not sure. But I suppose we ought to read verse 22 just for conscience sake. This is the upper room discourse, of course, and now we're in the Judas leaves in the gospel, right before the gospel lesson for this Sunday, and then the upper room discourse per se begins, and you have these series of questions, three or four of them, where the disciples sort of show their continued misunderstanding by asking these questions, which are often off the point and miss the point of everything. Judas, if we do read quickly verse 22, Judas, the one not Iscariot, that would be the other Judas, says to him, Lord, what has happened, te gegonin, that you are going to manifest yourself to us and not to the world? Question. So that's kind of sets, that's what Judas, the non-Iscariot one, says. And then the text itself begins with verse 23. Jesus answered and said to him, with a conditional, future more vivid conditional sentence, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and the Father of me will love him, and to him we will come, and abode with him we will make. Or dwelling with him, we will make. This is pretty easy, Greco-wise-o. Aeon, with the subjunctive, followed by the future indicative, is a future more vivid sentence. There's some debate as to whether or not there's really much oomph anymore in the New Testament when you have a future more vivid, because you don't have any future less vivids. Anyway, it's a condition. You throw it out in the future. If this happens, then this will happen. And again, there's some question as to whether or not it sort of expects a little bit more completely that the condition will in fact happen, or if that nuance has just sort of fallen out, along with a lot of other classical nuances which have fallen out. And the question arises, what is the logical connection between what Judas just asked and what Jesus says? And it's not altogether clear. One suggestion that I came across was that Judas thinks that, well, gee, if Jesus is the Christ and he's going to manifest himself, it'll be evident to everybody. So looking for some sort of glorious manifestation that will be evident both to the disciples and to the world. And Jesus responds by saying something about what happens when within the company of the disciples love for Jesus manifests itself in the keeping of his word and the coming of Father and Son to the believer and dwelling with him. In other words, until the parousia, not a public manifestation that the world will see, but simply a manifestation of Jesus and the Father's love within the body of the disciples. Maybe something like that. That's sort of theologizing. The grammar is pretty easy. Tereo, you know, this is the future indicative active, terese, and it's a contract verb, so outside the present stem, the vowels contract into an eta. And my Father will love him. Same contraction there, it's a-o instead of e-o, but it looks the same. And to him we will come, eleusamatha, from erkomai, future indicative active, right? Actually, it's middle deponent. So it looks like a middle or passive, it looks like a middle form, but it's active in meaning. And monain par auto, dwelling, we will make. And here maybe there is something of a middle twist to poiezamatha, we will make for ourselves a monain with him. Now, this is the same word that Jesus has used already in chapter earlier in chapter 14 where he says, I go to, in my Father's house are many monai, many dwelling places, right? And I go to prepare a place for you. So there's a nice connection there. Earlier in the chapter, it's final eschatology. You know, I'm going to go prepare a place for you, and when I come, I will take you to be with me, so that where I am, there you may be also. That's the promise at the parousia. But already now, until that time, the promise is that the Father and the Son, interestingly, will come to the believer, the disciple, and will make abode or house or dwelling with him. So not just the presence of the disciple, the believer, dwelling with Jesus eternally, but, you know, the table is turned, and the Father and the Son will come to make their abode with him already now. I found it interesting that it doesn't say en auto, it says par auto. So not in him, at least in this verse, but with him, next to him. Verse 24, ha me agapon, the one who does not love me, ou tere, does not keep my words. And the word, halagas han akuata, the word which you are hearing, han there is the relative pronoun, and it's, let's see, relative pronouns have antecedents, and lugas is the antecedent here, and han is accusative, because it's the object of akuata, the word you heard which, or you are hearing which. So again, the word which you are hearing is not emas, mine. That word sometimes looks unusual. People sometimes ask about that. It's simply the possessive pronoun. Instead of the genitive of the personal pronoun, mu, John, oddly enough, uses the possessive pronoun fairly frequently. It just simply means is not mine. But now note the shift, however. It is of the one who, it is of the Father who sent me. Allah tu pemsantas me patras. And here, of course, is the classic Johannine way of talking about the Father. I mean, dozens of times in John, God the Father is described by Jesus as the one who sent me. So much so that this fellow, this Johannine scholar, A.E. Harvey, sees that as the central theme of the whole gospel. And I know Dr. Keel has picked up on that and agrees with him. I've not actually read Harvey's work, but he sees apparently the central theme of Jesus as the divinely commissioned agent of the Father or something like that. And part of the data for that is this repeated emphasis that the Father is the one who sent Jesus into the world. And it is undeniably a very strong theme in John. So the word which you are hearing is not mine, Jesus says. It's of the one, genitive of possession, the one who sent me, Father. 25. These things I have spoken, perfect indicative active, first person singular from la leo. I have spoken and am still speaking to you. Menon is a present participle active. Its referent would be the I of the main verb. So the phrase is the unexpressed subject of the main verb, lalaleka. These participles that have the unexpressed subject of the main verb as their referent are predicate, should be taken predicatively, that is adverbially. And then there's the whole list of translations. You know, you can translate temporally or causally or concessively, while, because, although, conditionally, if, purpose, so that, just depending on what fits best in context. Here, along with meno, I think temporal works really well, while. So you translate, these things I have spoken to you while I am remaining par himin, with you, next to you. But the change is going to come, and that's in verse 26. But ha parakletos, excuse me, the paraclete, not to be confused with parakeet, the Spirit, the Holy One, Here's another relative pronoun, and it's neuter, because its antecedent is the neuter noun pneuma, and we would want to translate in our Trinitarian theology, whom the Father will send, pempse, in my name. That one, ekenos. Now, interesting, we've shifted from masculine, parakletos, to neuter, spirit, now back to masculine, ekenos, because the referent here is the masculine noun, parakletos. That one will teach you all things, ekenos himas didakse panta, and he will remind, hypomnese, from hypomnesko, he will remind you all things, another relative clause, which I said to you. And then the variant reading of whether or not we've got ego in there doesn't materially affect the sense of the sentence. This is an interesting verse theologically. To whom is this promise given and how is it manifested? And I guess I fall into the camp of those who want to say, this is a promise that's given to the disciples in the upper room and not generally to all Christians everywhere. And I think part of the evidence in that regard is the word remind. These are the guys to whom Jesus has taught and spoken over and over and over and over and over again. And we all know that most of the time they don't get it. But at least he said it to them. And the ministry of the Holy Spirit in their post-resurrection life is going to be to call to remembrance all the things which Jesus had said to them. And this is a theme that you see in John, where John explicitly says they didn't understand it now, but after Jesus was raised from the dead, they remembered what he said. Okay. So when you link those two things together, I think it supports the view that this is not, in fact, a promise that the Holy Spirit will guide, will teach all things to all believers, but to the apostles. And, you know, it makes the apostolic word all the more important, because even if we denominationally struggle and fight one another over what exactly is the truth and how to express it, at least we know where it is, that is, in the apostolic scriptures. And I suppose the prophetic scriptures could be included in there as well. What? No reaction? I'm trying. All right. Yeah, really. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. Don't you love it? Yeah, you think we could come up with some Old Testament lessons that would apply to Easter, don't you think? Who did that? A bunch of New Testament exegetes were on the committee that day. A bunch of Marcionites. Yeah. Right, thank you, Dr. Martinez. Verse 27. Emphatic first position. Peace I am leaving with you. Peace. What kind? Mine. Here's the possessive pronoun again. Peace, the mine stuff, I am giving to you. Not just as the world gives, I am giving to you. Here again is a point of comparison that isn't particularly clear. Or maybe I should say, it's generally clear, but it's not particularly clear. That is, what's the point of comparison here? Is it that the world gives sort of transient, transitory peace, or that the world gives a peace which is rooted in the lie? Or, I mean, again, what's the answer is probably yes to all these things, but the peace that Jesus gives is a permanent peace. It's rooted in him, and a nice connection here, of course, is the standard greeting which Jesus gives to the disciples in the upper room, which nevertheless I think is freighted with non-standard meaning. He simply appears to them and says, peace be with you. And I want to connect this to John 20 and say it's in the resurrection that Jesus establishes and gives the peace between God and men and peace one with another. So again, you can go on and on, drowning in the deep waters of Johannine theology. Not as the world gives, I am giving to you. Now a couple of present imperatives. Let not your heart, genitive of possession there, you possess your heart, be troubled, neither let it be timid. A daily a'o means to be timid or cowardly. And these are present imperative, third person singular. So you might even want to translate, stop being troubled. You know, the disciples are gathered in the upper room. They're a little on the cowardly side. Don't let this go on happening. You heard, Hutti, that I said to you. So the Hutti clause gives the content of what you heard. And now we have a quote. You heard that I said to you, quote, Hippago kai erkomai, I am, let's see, how would you get two words for going there? I am departing and I'm going and coming. Oh, that's it. I am going and I am coming to you. Maybe take the second verb there, erkomai, in a futuristic sense. I am going and I will come to you. Jesus is talking there about his departure after his resurrection, and the erkomai, I think, refers to the parousia. We've got some grammar here. If you loved me, you would have rejoiced that I am going to the Father, because the Father is greater of me. Let's see, we have a contrary to fact conditional sentence of mixed type, which is not at all unusual in the New Testament. The classic form would be either A plus the aorist indicative in the if part and on plus the aorist indicative in the then part, or A plus the imperfect indicative and on plus the imperfect indicative. But here we've got A plus the imperfect indicative, agapata, and on plus the aorist indicative, echareta. Just mixes the type, happens all the time. Still contrary to fact, if you had loved me, you would have rejoiced. But apparently they don't love him very much because they're not rejoicing. Well, fair enough. The important thing isn't their love for him, it's his love for them and us. Because I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater of me, genitive of comparison, greater than I am. Well, here's another kind of a conundrum. What exactly is the logic here? If you had loved me, you would have rejoiced that I am going to the Father because the Father is greater than I am. I mean, why is this the reason why they would have rejoiced? Well, again, there's a number of answers, I think. One of them certainly might be something like, the very fact that Jesus is going to the Father who sent him, and who in maybe sort of a, tell me if this sounds right, Andy, a functional sense is greater than Jesus, not ontologically, but because he's the sender and Jesus is the sent one. Because Jesus is going back to the Father, it means the work is done. It means the Father's plan, you know, has been completed. And for that reason, if they had figured that out, then they would have rejoiced. Jesus returning to the Father, if this is the time to do that, they should have known, or they could have known, and therefore rejoiced because Jesus was going to the Father, because the Father is greater than he is. Now, that's sort of a significant amount of theologizing, but I'm not exactly sure what to do, what else to do with that verse. Don Carson, you know, who's a good commentator and a great scholar, he thinks that the disciples should rejoice because Jesus will be happier now, or something like that. I'm going, I think he whiffed on that one. I mean, you know, Jesus gets to go back to his former state of glory and, you know, be done with this difficult ministry and so forth and so on. But does anybody else find John hard to understand? I mean, really, it's not clear. Synoptics are so clear. Well, actually, they're not clear either, but... Yeah. Right. It is for me, in some ways. Yeah, it is. Yeah, God so loved the world. Right. Yeah, the puddle in the lake, right? Wasn't it about John that whoever... Fill in the blank. Luther, Calvin, Augustine said. I mean, you know, these urban legends that float around in the church. And now I have said to you, verse 29, we'll finish up here. And now I have spoken to you Prin genestai, before it happens. This is a good construction, good Greek construction, prin with the infinitive, and you supply a natural subject from the sentence if it's not supplied. I have said it to you before it happens, before it becomes, before it genomize, for this purpose. And this is nice. We've got a conditional relative clause within a hina clause. So hina hatan, so that whenever it happens, you may believe. And again, this, I think, recalls the hypomimnesco theme of verse 20, whatever it was, 26. That is, this is for their sake. And then these, in fact, are part of the words that the Holy Spirit will call to their remembrance. And when the Holy Spirit does that, then they'll know and believe even more firmly that Jesus is who he always said that he was. It's really interesting, you know, that John has so much more explicit theological commentary, Christological, soteriological, in some ways, than the synoptics. But even so, the disciples still don't get it. You know, it just reminds us that this isn't the kind of thing that can be grasped purely on the basis of human reason and ability. But no one cometh unto me unless the Father who sent me draws him, or drags him, as that verb can be translated. Yeah, Jim?
At the beginning, we asked the question, what's the relationship between 22 and the rest of the world?
Yeah.
I was wondering, is it that Jesus is to be found in the words,
mm-hmm.
and the people in the world don't treasure him?
Right, right.
Therefore, they don't see him.
Right. And it only happens among the fellowship of those who treasure his words. Yeah, I think that's good. Right. The world isn't going to see that manifestation. So the Greek is pretty simple, but the theology is pretty deep. and it's time to stop. Yeah, Jim? Yeah. Mm-hmm. A little mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The Trinity is not to be understood, but to be worshipped. Is that a good thing to say? Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. And all that sort of contained in, maybe among other things, this phrase, the Father who sent me. Yeah. But the language of John is patient of so many possible flexings and interpretations that it really calls for, care and good systematics. I mean, really, good contextual systematics as well. That's it.